Ed, how much land do y'all own here?
About 400 acres.
How much did your mother own?
Well,
1,000 acres.
She sold the choice off. Well, we estimated it around, what, 300, didn't we, or 350?
Well, we bought some since.
They leased it at 450 for gas and oil.
Well, you could be able to get it from an aerial photograph, couldn't you? Have you got, oh, I got the aerial photographs of this for you.
But how can you compute the acreage from the aerial photograph?
The ag people down here can tell you exactly how much acreage you got from your aerial photos. Didn't I didn't give it to you, did I?
No.
Well, I bought one at Frank's. No.
You didn't have to have a survey in your bottom?
No. I don't reckon there's ever been surveyed.
No, the deeds are...
I guess it's
from ridge,
down,
well, Zeke's branch is easy. It's from ridge to ridge, you know.
Yeah.
And, well, the Mill Hill's easy. I mean, it's from one point clear down to another point, and the bottoms are from 200 feet back from the road on...
If I'm not slightly mistaken, Fred Gabbert told me he's got enough information together to write a history out of the county. He won't give any of it out, of course, because he wants one of his children to write it. He's got the info together. He was telling me the first settlers in Allegheny County were an Abner and a Baker. He gave them their names and all. And it's interesting that I know an Abner Baker, don't you?
Yeah, Abner Baker.
Yeah. In the back of my mind. And they settled at the mouth of up to Buffalo. And he
but
said.
Did we stop up there and talk to an Ab Baker?
Yeah, I guess we did. Yeah, there. That. I'll wait till Lita comes back. There were three Indian families living in Mouth Creek, and that Baker killed them. Get rid of them.
All goes there.
Well, that would have been down by no. Yeah, kill the Indian families. Get rid of them. So I would guess that Abner Baker would be the great-grandson, probably, or great-great-grandson of these people. I was telling him that, Fred was telling me that an Abner and a Baker settled at the mouth of Buffalo, first settlers in the county, and there were three Indian families up there, and that Baker or Abner, one, I forget which one it was, killed the Indian families to get rid of them. And,
well, the day that you and me and the boys went up there, we stopped and talked to a Baker, right?
Yeah.
It seemed to me like it was an Ab Baker.
Yeah, there's an Abner, but it wasn't.
Well, I wonder how in the hell come that iron bridge way up on up about north. It's washed down now.
Yeah, that bridge we drove across. I mean, where we stopped and
Well, now, the last time I was up there, that's been corrected, and that road goes through and comes out way up the...
No, we were up there last year.
It comes up on Bullskin or somewhere. Well, I was up there sometime last fall.
Did you put a new bridge or you just...
No, I forded the creek. I went in the truck.
Well, we were afraid.
Was that the day I scared the hell out of Pete at the mouth of Wolf Creek?
Was that Wolf Creek?
Yeah. I bet we were the first truck that's forded there in a long time.
Maurice, I'd like to know the origin of big sturgeon and little sturgeon. Do you suppose there were sturgeon
fish
here in those days?
Yeah. Lita, when we were little, wild dog was in there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Remember talking about wild dog?
Yeah.
On one side, and Upper Buffalo on the other, Brushy Creek and wild dog.
Yeah. Now, where's Brushy Mountain?
Brushy Mountain's way down in the sturgeon country.
Which way is that, Sturgeon?
Well, that's toward Lee County from here and toward
Island City.
Toward,
I think when we came from Island City, we came around by Sturgeon.
What direction is that?
Well, Sturgeon, the big Sturgeon runs into the Kentucky River at Heidelberg.
Does it?
And then I guess Wild Dog is one of the upper tributaries of Sturgeon.
Well, we tried to find Island Creek two or three years, Island City several years ago, and we couldn't find any trace of it. And we asked again last year how to go, and we went up one fork and around and back the other fork, and there's no trace of it left.
The roads have changed everything.
There's no, well, I mean, the buildings are all gone.
Yeah.
The families have gone. There were a bunch of boys standing there, and we stopped and asked them, where's Robert Pritchard's store? Never heard of it. Well, where's, what was that other man's name? Never heard of it.
Well, Scoville's gone. Was interesting to talk to Aunt Mabel, you know, because Uncle Oscar was raised at Scoville there.
Yeah.
But Scoville now, just a little wide place in the road.
Well, this fellow that came up getting oil and gas leases lives out at Vincent. His name is Pearson, and I think he said his family owns about 2,500 or 3,000 acres of land, and how they got it, his daddy was a bootlegger. And back when times were hard, he made and sold whiskey and
had money
and bought up land cheap. Biggest farm in the county, I guess.
2,500 acres would be the biggest farm in the county, I guess. See, at one time between here and Boonville, this is 4 miles, with John M. Campbell and Willard Terry and Dad, Charlie Rose, Gene Gabbard and Doc Gibson.
Well, Gene Gabbard didn't own anything down there then.
Yeah, he owned next to Charlie Rose. Well, Hubert Wilson, that was Dad's place.
Yeah.
They didn't own that.
And Doc Gibson didn't own anything down there.
Oh, Kilburn. It was Kilburn.
Yeah,
instead
Kilburn,
of the same. Yeah. So then John M. Campbell and Willard Terry and
Willard just owned a little place that Munch Campbell sold him.
Or the Garrett or the Hubert Wilson place. Then the Charlie Rose place, and then the Kilburns.
Yeah. I wondered for a long, long time, well, why don't people build up here? And all of a sudden it dawned on me, this was still under the feudal system until those big farms were broken up.
Yeah.
I mean, those tenants were responsible. I mean, the man who owned the farm more or less had life or death hold over them, because if they didn't do the pleasing, he wouldn't give them a good recommendation. They couldn't get another place to live.
Well, that depression was rough. I remember when Dad would give a family, a man, a woman, and 7 or 8 kids, $100, and they'd spend in trade, and they'd spend most of the summer with axes and sprouting hoes, grubbing hoes, cleaning up fields, just to eat.
Well, see, their tenants here just farmed on, I mean, they'd just raise a little patch of corn on the hays or a little patch of tobacco on the hays. And they got a cow pasture and a little place
for
a garden. And when they weren't busy in their crops, Mr. Campbell would hire them, pay them $1 a day. But they worked 12 hours a day for $1 a day. And if Ms. Campbell needed a woman to help her at the house, I mean, their wives were more or less obligated to.
Well, how many mornings at 4 o'clock have you heard somebody yell at the house, "Hey, George!"
Yeah.
Dad yell out the window, "Who is it, Lion?" "This is Ben Harvey, whoever it is, and I'm on the way to the field, and I need a quarter's worth of staples or some nails or something like that." And he'd get up and go and open the store with an oil lamp or whatever he had, I reckon, and weigh out 25 cents worth of staples so they could fence or something like that. We call them steeples.
Wonder whatever happened to Darwin Harvey. Herschel Harvey, I think, runs the farm out there.
Herschel or Ed?
Oh, no, I don't know. I was assuming Herschel.
I think Ed runs.
Maybe Ed runs.
Because the reason I say that is his niece by marriage, his wife's niece, is a nurse at St. Luke's Hospital, Annie Barrett. She's raised near the Smallwood place. Right there. Lila, I got pictures of the Smallwood place. It's all gone. But I stopped there and photographed it years ago.
Ed attended a shotgun wedding out there one time.
That was a log cabin, wasn't it? Two stories.
He was a witness at it. Fred Becknell married Jesse Beaton.
Yeah. I can't remember that.
You can't remember?
Well, I have to remember that, because that road was open well since I could remember. I remember when they cut the gap through out there at the top of the hill.
You remember everybody used to walk out there every night?
Yeah. That's where Paul Wilson got the name Steam Shovel. He got so bad scared when Steam Shovel blew his whistle once he tinkled on himself.
Well, you knew Roy Long and Dorothy Wilson were married.
Yeah.
And Roy's evidently had a lot of surgery, a lot of complications of some kind.
Elmer's dead.
Yeah, Elmer's dead. Zella's remarried. She married Bill Brandenburg.
Bill Brandenburg.
I don't know who Bill... I don't think I ever knew him.
Yeah. Where are Velma and Edna Brandenburg?
I don't have the faintest idea. Cash and Lena are still living. They celebrated
the anniversary
not long ago. Huh?
Were they in Louisville?
I don't know.
You know, the Herndon place and all that country up there has changed so it's not even recognized. Yeah. Does William Edwards still own that place?
I think he does, yeah.
Who owns the old Andy Batman place? Well, that's gone.
I don't know where Andy, I never did know where Andy used to live. It was way up past Island City somewhere, wasn't it?
Yeah, but then he moved down to the old Camel place.
Where well, they own that still.
They own that
yeah.
still.
See, Grace is still living.
And Grace is still living.
And Virginia and Charlie Rose
yeah.
live just behind her and over. Grace is up right about 80. She's had diabetes and several heart attacks.
When do you remember electricity coming in?
When we lived down at the John Stepp place, we got Reagan came down and wired our house. Of course, it might have been in Boonville before that. I don't know, but that's when we got it.
That's the second time it's been in Boonville.
Well, they had it once years ago when the mill, it was generated over at the mill.
Yeah. Well, I remember that when Reagan Myers ran that place, had that little diesel. For that little engine and run a small generator. But the commercial power that came through was later, wasn't it?
REA came in after we left here. We yeah. couldn't...
Marshall, you all wore jackets?
No, not at all yet.
I've got the air conditioner turned on in your room, but I've got a bedspread and a blanket on your beds. And a sheet.
Well, we're sitting in the kitchen, where it's warmer?
No, I'm with you all. If you all want to sit in there, you're
cool. Are the bugs eating you or
anything? No, I haven't been touched by a bug or anything. I've been perfectly... perfectly content. No, if y'all are cool, we can go inside. Don't make no never mind to ask.
Well, let's go inside just on general principles.
I'm with you.
If everybody is so agreeable.
Those your tomatoes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got some yellow ones and some red ones. That's an orange tomato.
I had some. Leela, did I tell you what I did to Lester yesterday? We stopped
yeah,
in Richmond. And Lester gone out to get a flea because they found a flea on the dog. That's the big news, of course. That darn dog is a beauty, I tell you. So Lester was gone. So I went out back and I picked some of his biggest tomatoes and I put them in a paper bag and I set them in the middle of the car. And I said to David, now well, let's just wait out here. And, like we just got in, when Lester gets here, let's tell him that we brought in some tomatoes.
I think that's my potato tomato. Yeah, I thought he was.
And we gave them to him, and boy, he nearly died. Thought I'd really outfoxed him.
Yeah.
Had beaten him on the tomato crop.
Did he go out and look at his to see?
Well, he finally figured it out.
Yeah.
Leela, do I remember seeing big gourds hole and stuff and Maul Myers
yeah.
She had a big salt gourd that they had brought across the mountains from Virginia into Kentucky that they brought, they helped her salt in.
Well, I told somebody recently that she had a big gourd, at least, or big gourds in that smokehouse.
Yeah.
And another thing was the old rainwater they collected
rainwater.
Well, I know, I remember those. I mean, the malls, she'd have all these big crocs around the side of that.
Well, I don't remember her crocs.
Yeah,
but
sitting
I remember
all
the rain
barrels. Keep that something with
but
it.
But
if it
would start raining, the first thing Mother would do is, if it looked like it was going to be a good rain, she'd run out and pour out the old water. You know, it'd be black with soot where it had come all through. Rinse the barrel out and catch fresh water.
Yeah.
And the only thing you could wash your hair with was rainwater.
Yeah, soft water.
And Maul Myers used Cantrox as a shampoo.
Cantrox.
And I have wondered what it was. It was little grains. You had to get it at a drugstore.
Cantrox, so I have to look
and
it up.
What you did, you melted it in water, in hot water, and you washed your hair with it.
Probably water softener, you might guess.
And you remember her big rose bush that she had over the frame that was so big?
Yeah.
And you remember her bubby bush?
Yeah, I love
that.
That's
a calicanthus.
I've got one in my yard because of that, but the damn chemicals they put on the yard keep it killed off.
Well, no, we looked at, Nature 2 wanted one, and we found what they called a calicanthus.
Sweet shrub.
At Hillcrest Nursery, and I took Nature 2 by, and we looked at it again, but when we looked at it this time, it had a fruit on it, about like that, and Mom Myers didn't ever did have a fruit.
No, the calicanthus, or sweet shrub.
So I don't know, that's what they call this, but I think it makes sense.
I'll bring you one down here.
Bring me a cutting, or
seeing that water bucket reminds me of the time Dad had some ice in a bucket, ice water, and some drunk come in the store that one hot, miserable summer day. And he was so thirsty, he took a big drink of that water, and he turned and said, "Hey, by God, George, man, that ice water sure knows his business." Bee gum. You remember bee gum?
Bee gum,
over on Ship Camp?
Yeah. Daddy, he came by the tree today.
The background was he got jailed for robbing a beehive of somebody else, so they called him Bee Gum.
Oh.
And he came by, Daddy was not the only man that he would trade with, but the only man that didn't make fun of him. And he came by one afternoon and he said, "George, what kind of bread do you sell? I need a loaf of bread." And he said, "Honeycrust." And then man got some mad, he couldn't see, he thought that he was throwing.
Quit trading with him. Oh, people are funny.
Maurice, one thing I remember, I must have been very small at the time, but you remember how Mother used to dress up in the afternoon and sit out in the yard, and this particular afternoon she had taken her turn out. She had, everything had been scalded and was spotless, of course, and Alice Aerosol came over and was sitting talking to her. And it's the first time I had ever done it, but she would turn out. That buttermilk started coming up through the hole around the dasher, and it looked good to me.
That's,
and I just dabbed down and licked that buttermilk off the lid of that churn, and I thought Mother was going to die.
Yeah.
Right in front of Alice Aerosol.
Yeah.
How was Alice Aerosol kin to
her? She was kin to Mother, but damn, I can tell you how.
I've never been able to fix
that.
Y'all want a sandwich?
No, not me yet.
Fix you scrambled eggs? Bacon?
Fix my egg sandwich.
Fix your egg sandwich?
No, hell no, I don't want a bite to eat. I'm full.
We don't have any ice cream. We've been letting our frozen stuff kind of run down.
Heather, y'all were pretty well self-sufficient up here on your place, weren't you? I mean, farming-wise, you raised everything. You raised a lot of cattle in those days.
Did you raise anything in this creek bottom right here, in this branch?
This branch, this whole hillside used to be cleared up, and the grass was cleared up to the head of the holler. I was going up there, and he run 50 head of cattle up in here.
Maurice, did I tell you, Ed and I started clearing out a little garden up the holler here that used to be a garden 75 years ago. It had grown up with blackberry briars and weeds of all kinds. All over in your head. We got about half of it clean this summer.
You want to put a garden in there?
If we get it all cleaned out, we're going to have time and put some garden in. We planted a bunch of peach seeds and some of the ornamental plums up there just to see if someone will come up. Not where we were clearing, but close to it.
Do you have any wild plums on the place?
I don't know them.
You don't know them.
When I was little, I used to go over near Chestnut Gap somewhere and pick wild plums.
Any pawpaws?
None that I know of. Maury said that's a pawpaw down there right next to the road.
Yeah, you got a pawpaw right down the
mountain.
Oh,
sure, that's some good ones.
Up in the woods on my little place is the tallest pawpaws I've ever seen. They're in there at a bunch of hackberry trees, and those things are 30 feet tall.
There was a sassafras I saw up there.
Sassafras. I wanted Eddie to cut some sumac down. You know, it's all over the place. And up above the garden, there's a big grove of stuff. I thought it was sumac. And he went up there one afternoon and looked at it, and he said, "Granny, that ain't sumac, that's sassafras."
I saw a big grove of sassafras.
Sassafras. So you're not supposed to drink too much of it anymore. Saffron, I guess it is. There's acid in sassafras that causes a lot of kidney damage.
Saffron? Well, I thought saffron.
Not saffron. It's a saffron. Saffron.
Well, anyhow, I made Eddie some sassafras tea. He he wanted to see what I told him it tasted like root beer. So we took and split the bark and I stewed it.
Oh, that's what root beer is made from.
I stewed it and simmered it, and finally it took a long time to get any flavor in it. Because we were using fresh root. And finally we got it so it had some flavor, and I put it in the refrigerator and got it cold, and he sweetened it up and tried to drink it.
The biggest hickory nuts I ever saw in my life was in the swamp down behind our house, and honestly, they were as big as eggs. And I remember when we used to get a cold or anything, Dad would go down there and cut the inner bark out of that tree, strip a piece out of it, and boil that up into tea with a little sugar in it.
Well, I'll tell you something. One winter, the winter we built that little house down on the main road, you know, that little pine house. We had a little half gallon ice cream freezer. And we made a lot of ice cream, and we decided we wanted some syrup for pancakes or something, and we didn't have any. And Ed said, I'll get us some. So he went down and cut some hickory bark. We brought it up, and we boiled it. And put it with brown sugar, and it makes good maple syrup.
Yeah, hickory
bark.
Well, that's
right. That's candy bark hickory structure.
Yeah. Did you all ever make maple syrup here?
Mm-hmm.
You ever make molasses here on this place?
Yeah. So we keep bees
here? Yeah, not too many. Well, it's been 10 years.
So we keep bees here?
Yeah.
You know, this man up here on the creek who's got a bunch of bees, and I was telling Ed what you said about the bees being killed out. Didn't have enough bees to pollinate in some place, because I told him maybe we'll get a
sign. You can take, I've read, don't know it firsthand, but they tell me you can take an alfalfa field and increase your yield of food value on it by almost twice or three times by having bees in there.
Increase the corn crop yield.
Any fruit crop or anything. Now there's a big, huge business of people who do nothing but trying to make a living and just furnishing beehives and fields to pollinate the crops. And the seven, it is a deadly enemy of the bee, apparently. And it's just killing off. Paul Snyder's on the board.
They're using
Luke.
Seven by the
Carlos,
the cabbage and beans. And
well, see, in one day it loses its effectiveness, apparently, so it's safe to the human, but it kills all every damn insect, apparently. And seven also, when you spray a tree with it, will knock part of the blossoms off. It gives you a lot better fruit. So that the orchards now are sprayed with seven early, and that knocks automatically killing off a lot of the blossoms.
Well, that's what I wondered, what they were saying. Well, I kind of expect that apple tree to bloom next year.
Well, a friend of mine there in Fort Thomas has planted 1,600 apple trees. He's going into a commercial, he's a doctor, and he's had a hell of a time with it. He had to get a 3-foot auger on his tractor, drill his holes, plant the trees. And now, what, it'd be 2 or 3 years, he bought the trees. The trees were refrigerated for something like 2 or 3 years inside of cooling compartment from a nursery, a mother nursery somewhere in Michigan. And then he sprays the trees every 2 weeks from Christmas on. And he uses an oil and he uses everything and throws in seven. But they spray them all. And they spray them even though they're not bearing for these years, they have to be. Then he has to take a shaker that vibrates so fast that he just puts it, it just grabs around the tree trunk and just shakes. And apparently it's barely visible, but it shakes the apples off. And they take this inverted umbrella type thing and plant around a tree and pick the apples up.
Did the ginseng guy say if the ginseng is a bad business this year? Did you say?
I asked him if he got any. He said, found any. He said a little. And I didn't ask him. I'm going to ask him next time he comes by if he leaves some way he digs. I'm sure he does because he does that for a living.
He don't dig anything but four-pronged roots.
He's a scroungy-looking character. He looks almost like a frontiersman. He's so dressed so ragged, but he came by.
Well, does he do it without people's permission, or does he?
Well, no, he just does it. I mean, this is open range as far as blackberries and ginseng.
Even though it's private, there's
even
no...
Even though it's private property.
Hunting and stuff like
he
that.
He came by the house one day, and Ed was here, and he said, Mr. Campbell, I just want to tell you one thing. He said, I'm up in through here at all hours of the day and night, and if I ever see anybody around your house, I'll let you know about it. He said, I'm not afraid of getting burnt out.
You don't have anything.
They say he lives in a little shack smaller than a storeroom out here. But I have no objection to, I mean, I'd rather he'd hunt ginseng than these damn people get out and start shooting. It makes me so mad I can't see.
You got deer on here now? Have you ever seen deer?
Never have seen one. We were going somewhere one day, and maybe at the store, or it may have been one of the days when we got Mrs. Moore to stay with the children. Eddie said a man with a bunch of dogs came down off the hill. Just if I'd been here, I'd have run him off.
There were elk in this country when they first came in. I don't know why they don't restock the Daniel Boone Forest with them, but apparently there's been no effort made.
Well, these people up here would kill everything that moves.
Elk wouldn't wrestle.
No, they wouldn't wrestle. They'd take after them, they wouldn't stop till they run down with dogs or... He was trying to find out about Brenda. They didn't have a thing on her on the news at 6 o'clock left of her.
Well, they thought it would go out over Yucatan. And
did it go in? Give me a nickel for it. Or sometimes they would back in the sandwich.
No cracker from her?
Yeah, butter didn't come in the Boonville until we were pretty good sized children, did it?
No, I don't remember.
And then they came in big buckets, and they had to take it out with a paddle to the train.
Yeah.
You remember old Porter Herald?
Yeah.
Got some peanut butter. He says, come dirty, Dick. I choked on
peanut butter. Come dirty. Water, Dick. Water, Dick. On peanut butter. Dick decided, you said Dick was buried yesterday. Dick A and little A and little Ellick and Porter. Porter wasn't too bright for Dick's boys. What are they getting into? And Dick decided they're stealing something from him. Corn out of his crib or something for their horses. And Dick took an old muzzle-loading shotgun and loaded it with poke feathers. And he shot them one night. Scared the hell out of them. They thought they were killed.
Do you remember when we were children, Maurice, and the four cars were very common? Dick Hurdle had a car.
Yeah.
And he would drive up to our house and turn, and he'd ask us if we wanted to take a ride. We'd all pile in, and he'd drive us out the road a little bit.
Back. Oh, he's back there. Yeah, I like this guy.
And he and Eddie lived, they were our closest neighbors, really, when we lived
out of the sixth place. They lived
right
across the street. He was a jack of all trades.
Yeah.
He was a mechanic. Electrician? No. He had an auger eye, didn't he? No, slightly.
I had been cut or something. One of them's
tied to the other. Yeah. And the little auger had that comb. Dick had a...
Auger.
Yeah, he had a cross eye. And, you know, one eye is kind of an angle. Nicknames Pete or something, I tell you.
Auger. Well, auger had that comb
could get drunk. Every day, every time he gets whiskey, he'd get drunk. One time he got drunk. Got a big chair and sat down at the bank, in front of the bank. Lead back, huh?
I thought that was the other Dick Combs.
Dick Combs.
Yeah.
And Tom Moore, Shine Beckman, some of them, Clarence Moore, got a bottle of jet oil. And they painted Dick a mustache. He's sitting there asleep. Painted the mustache and painted his face up. And Dick slept right about noon, and the school children come by, and everyone all would come by and say, hey, look at Dick. Look at Dick. One of the things that he does. Hey, I'm about all these school children.
Practical jokes. I remember him putting tying Larry Becknell on a mule and turpentining a mule. God. Listen, that's almost murder. Tie a man's feet under a mule and put turpentine under his tail. Man, he took off.
He had a brother, not talking about Nick, he had a brother named Bootneck. Our father had a boy called Short Gun.
And a horse head back.
Horse head.
Yeah. Well, now that's just some good. The horse head and Bootneck were brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you never called him by the correct name, did you?
What did they call him?
Jesse. They all had nicknames. Well, Lester went by the name of Kirk.
Yeah.
Marvin was Bulldog. Lester was Peanut.
Yeah.
Peanut. He ate peanuts right now. Now they nicknamed him Peanuts and Shine back more. Where'd that come from?
I don't know. What did they call him? Pumpkin?
Pumpkin what?
No.
Funky.
Funky.
I don't think I ever saw Tom Moore sober.
You know, Tom killed himself or officer that this did. You know how he died.
Froze.
Yeah, cancer, so they went to me. And he got some whiskey poured down that tube.
Oh. Oh, that sounds like it.
Mary Bagnall said it did.
Mary Bagnall missed him. Well, she hadn't seen him one morning, and she went up where his trigger
was. I didn't even know him was dead.
He was laying there dead with several whiskey bottles around.
He was in. George couldn't read any lines.
No. The store there, and he had some blankets.
And if he sold so much of something, he was supposed to get a premium. And so he's worked hard at it. He sold and sold and sold, and finally, Daddy and his son
Robert.
And Daddy and his son Robert. George's son Robert got together and they got an old bearskin rug somewhere.
Old bear hide,
yeah. Old bear hide, malt-eaten bear hide. And they took it, wrapped it, and took it down to the post office and got the postmaster to cancel it. Deliver it to George or hand it out to George when George came down to the mail.
He said, here's my prize come in.
Here's my prize come in.
Dad asked George long once, said, George, how do you figure your profits? He said, well, he couldn't read and write. He said, well, all I know is, George, if I buy something for $1 and sell it for $2, I ain't losing money.
They always asked about George Long's knife. He could cut cheese or ham thinner than anybody
in the
country.
Yeah,
I read
that. George, how big was George's old store was bigger than the one.
Well, now that restaurant down there now was his old store, and the kitchen
was
where the restaurant was. Oh yeah, well it was
smaller than that.
Do you remember when Judge Lewis had Lester Ebersole arrested for selling firecrackers?
Yeah. Let me finish telling this. Oh. The old store had a wooden floor, and right up front where everybody had to walk was mail full of nails in the cracks where Morris and Marvin had nailed cracks in the holes. Daddy loved
it. We sat there for hours on end and with new hammers and just taking nails out of the cage and we drive them head to head.
Right
with
the crack.
Right down the crack of the floor, and then we come back up. There's an oiled wooden floor. We come back up and out.
Well, what the? There's a second story in that building, isn't there?
Yeah.
What they do with the upstairs? Do you know what they do?
We stayed up there this summer.
Well, Daddy lived up there, and then when we came.
Oh, that's right.
Tell Pete about Judge Hurst getting Lester from selling firecrackers.
Lester's selling firecrackers, and he's doing a little advertising. He got a whole package, one of those nickel packages. Back in those days, he just let it, threw it out in the street, and bang, 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 it went off. You know how they live. And Judge Hurst was holding court. He told the sheriff, said, go down and arrest whoever shooting them firecrackers. Go down and arrest them, bring them up here. And he went down and arrested Lester. And fined him $10 for disturbing court. So it went on several years. Lester hated old Judge Hurst. And one
morning, I sure got up and dressed and put on some good clothes and said, "Where are you going, Lester?" And he said, "I'm going down to Bayville." But what's the matter? He said, "Judge Hurst died last night, and I'm going down to see if folks have thrown son of a bitch under the ground."
Lester wouldn't hold a grudge.
Boy, let me tell you something about old George. He was slick as could be. You know,
George
Lowe? No, Dave. When his store burned, he debated on what to build back there, and he said he believed he'd build a pin garage. And they had a city council about that time. I think Ed's father was on it. And I don't know who else was on it, but anyhow, Charlie Seals objected. Daddy's store was there long before Charlie's house was, but Charlie Seals objected. They'd always been good neighbors. He went before the town council and objected. Well, Charlie was running for circuit, for Commonwealth attorney, unopposed. Nobody was going to run against it. John Walker had been Commonwealth attorney, and he had announced that he wasn't going to run again. So the next weekend after that happened, Daddy said, we were going to Richmond, and Daddy said, "Ed, I want you to drive over here on what such and such street and are in the stop just a minute, let me out." And we drove over from John Walker's house, let Daddy out, and Daddy went in and talked to John Walker a few minutes and came back. Got in the car and we went on to Richmond. The next day John Walker came out, the Commonwealth attorney, and beat the hell out of her. And he never did know what beat him.
Really?
No, he never did know that.
Robert
he could get his revenge and be satisfied without
Robert Long was on the city county. George wanted to build a store is what he wanted to
build. He wanted to build a store.
But he acted like he wanted to build a garage and they went to the council and Charlie said, "George, if you put a store garage up there, it beat and hammer and make all kinds of noise and disturb me." And George said, "Well, I don't see how they could disturb me any worse than that old dog. He's got his barks and howls all the time."
Jackasses in a tin barn and they wouldn't make as much noise as them old bird dogs.
Yeah.
But he didn't want Daddy to build there. He wanted it left vacant so we could have a good view of downtown.
Charlie would never go to bed, would he? He's up all night long.
Henry Campbell lived right across the street and had a store over there where the Odd Fellow Hall used to be. Had a store in there. And somebody came along and talking to Henry, said, anybody ever break in your store? And no, he said, no, nobody ever breaks in. He said, do you have it guarded or anything? He said, no, I don't have it guarded. Don't need it guarded. He said, what do you mean you don't need it guarded? Well, he said, Charles Seals here don't go to bed till about 12 or 1 o'clock. And Uncle Rob gets up at 2 o'clock in the morning, said just about 1 hour a day back. I was always in there. I've got somebody.
Uncle Rob Wilson come in the store one morning early and wanted a pound of coffee. And I never will forget that a brand called Green Bag, and it's 15 cents a pound. And he said, no, he wanted a better coffee than that. He'd just been elected jail or something, making pretty good money. And so I thought I'd be a good salesman, and Dad had another 15 cent coffee, and I said, well, here's one that's 20 cents. And he took a pound of it, and I had to tell Dad, now if no one comes down, he got to get in this branch and whatever it was, and set it to him for 20 cents. And he bragged on it the rest of the time, but he got a nickel bag extra for it. Bertie Seal came up once and wanted some sugar, and she made, I think it was 13 or 15 quarts of plum preserve, and I got it mixed up and gave her part sugar and part
salt.
She was about ready to kill me. I couldn't have been 14, 15 years old.
I remember one time I poured some vinegar out of the barrel for somebody, and the mother came out with it, and I was horrified. I thought it was a snake.
What came out?
The mother of vinegar. It's
the mother. It's a slimy, ropey looking.
Yeah. Some of your kin folks, of course, you come married Emma. She was one of the Moore girls. I mean, no, Henry Moore's girl. She's a cousin to you.
Yeah, except for Claymore.
Yeah. And she was a big woman. And she complained with her feet hurting her all the time. And they, up in those days, your dad just, they'd come in and say, give me a pair of shoes, size 6 or 7s or whatever, and he'd just wrap them up and give them to them, that's all. Well, she said she wore 7. And of course, she'd come, she said, get me a pair of shoes today. And Of course, he came down. He said, Emma complains the whole goddamn time about her feet hurting her. He said, can you wrap up an 8 or 8 1/2 and put it in a 7 box? And I said, yeah. So I got her about an 8 1/2 shoe, put it in a 7 box and took it home. She tried it on, wore. She said, them was the best shoes. She bragged on, said, these are the best shoes, the most comfortable shoes I ever had in my life. I mean, they don't hurt my feet and they feel good. Said, remember what they, where they are and where'd you get them? Of course, said, I bought them from that boy down there, John M. boy. But she said, you tell that boy to remember what kind of these are now. I want, next time I get a pair, I want, it was so good, of course, he couldn't keep. He said, Emma, you're wearing an 8 1/2 instead of a 7. And she said, I'm going to whip that boy next time I go to the store.
Horace, what kind of shoes was it that he sold?
Endicott Johnson.
Endicott Johnson. And our Wright sold Star Brand.
Yeah.
And Mr. Campbell of Leroy's sold Star Brand. And Daddy spent his whole life telling everybody that Star Brand shoes wasn't any good. Well, finally, Harv Wright quit selling them, or somebody quit selling them, and the salesman came around to see Daddy and tried to get him to take over that brand. And Daddy told him, he said, well, gentlemen, I couldn't handle your shoes. I've been spending 4 years telling everybody they wasn't any good. I couldn't take your shoes.
You ever met Mason?
Yeah.
Matt was a wild man. He used to argue with me when I was a little kid. He'd sit around and tell me about the four corners of the earth because the Bible says it. He had a pistol that was as big as a goddamn rifle. You never saw anything like it in life. And he wore an old army coat from World War I, an overcoat. And he had on a big old slouch hat. And he wore a bandana around his neck a lot. And he had a wild mule. And there's a ball band salesman. Said to mother one night after in the store, I've got to talk to Mr. Garrett. And she said, he's on sugar camp. And he said, I've got to talk to him. So she said, well, one of the boys will show her. And I went with him. And right a few hundred yards up from the mouth, about where Dean Bowman lives, or somewhere right up in there, you hit a slate fall where the wagons are hauling logs out of there, you know, and breaded it down. They couldn't possibly get down that. Well, I took him over there. We were going to park somewhere to just leave the car in the road and walk on in to see Dad. And all of a sudden, Mint Mason come riding down that creek, hell bent for election, with that coat flying open, a red bandana around his neck, that long beard, and his big slouch hat on that wild-looking mule, and that pistol in his shoulder holster. I thought this salesman was going to die right on the spot. Oh, that was a funny thing. I couldn't have been 15 years old, man, and it really tickled me.
Marsh, I'll tell you one of my escapades. My daddy was gone. I stayed in the store and had Aunt Pop Breeden was staying with us. She's an old woman, stayed there and kept house. And late one afternoon, the D.M. Ferry seed man came by to check out the seeds. You know,
Ferry Seed Company. I remember where it was.
So he came by and checked out the seed company and left a statement of what we'd sold. And he said, I want to stay all night. And I said, all right. And I went out until I asked Aunt Pop if she'd cook extra supper. She said it'd be all right. She'd cook it. And then I got to thinking that they were a whole roll of meat in the town that night, and I wanted to go to that meeting. And I knew Aunt Pop wouldn't stay there, just him and she and that salesman. And I decided I'd get him to go with me, and I said, fella, they're having a whole roll of meat in the town tonight, and I'm going down. Let's go. And all he said, son, I've been riding all day. I'm too tired. I just couldn't go. And I said, well, would you like a little drink before supper? He said, I'd like the best in the world. So I had some whiskey upstairs, some moonshine, and it was bad. And I took and poured wine. I poured a quart of wine and a quart of moonshine in a 1/2 gallon jar. And said, here you are, drink. He drank it, and he said, that's pretty good. I mean, the wine sort of killed the taste of it. We took 2 or 3 drinks, and he's telling me about it. He'd been married, and second time he's telling me about his wife. And we went downstairs, and I said, I mentioned to him again, I said, let's go to that whole little meeting tonight. Oh, he said, I'm too tired, I couldn't go. We went downstairs on the porch, and he started to tell me something, and he leaned against the porch, post, and he fell right flat on his back in the yard. He raised up like this, he said, "Where's the holder over me?" And I said, "It's a tail." I knew we were ready to go. So we had supper, and Cleveland Chouse down the road. So my father had an old 45 pistol out there, and I filled up a quart jar of that mixture of wine and whiskey. We took another drink to him, Cleveland Chouse. Oh, now we gave him a drink. And I drove down in Grandma's Lane there, and we stopped and drunk the rest of it, and I just pitched that old jar over there. And I took that 45 pistol and I shot that jar. I mean, I bursted it all to hell. I shot six times and then reloaded, stuck it back and went to town. He looked at me, you know. And so we went down there, and I went to the meeting. I said, "I want you to see my girl." I don't know, well, maybe Leela, I don't know. And,
no, I don't think it's not there.
So the meeting was over. He got out of town and bought him some cigars, and he was smoking, his eyes set in his head, and drunk as a badger. And we started home, and had Cleveland there, and Alice Spencer wanted to ride with us, and on them dirt roads, you know.
Yeah.
And he said, "Turn your lights on." And I said, "We ain't got no lights." And he said, "Take it down to the garage and I'll have some. Put on it." And I said, "Well, hell, I ain't garaging 40 miles here." I said, "I know how to go home." So we go home. He sat there at the door about half open, sat like this. And he said, "Can you see good?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, I can see good." And land God did, when we got to the mouth of that Greenville holler, here come a mule right off the top of that hill and run right in front of that car. And I like to hit that mule. I stopped and turned it off, and he got out. So we went. I was going to let Alice didn't want him to smoke cigars. And I told him, I said, "This man's smoking cigars." I guess she's a hold of her. She didn't want to smell that smoke. Went home, got in, and I parked the car, and she got out and let Cleveland out. You know, and he was going to sleep upstairs. He said, "Just a minute, son." He said, "I'm going to tell you something." And I said, "All right." He said, "I'm going upstairs and pray tonight. I'm going to thank the Lord." He said, "I went 4 miles in a Ford car without any lights with a drunk man and a 45 pistol and him drunk. And I got back home safe, and my God, I'm going to thank the Lord for it." He said, he went on the next morning. He got out and sent his wife $100 money order. I wrote him a money order for $100. He's mailed it to his wife. Then he told me how much he'd enjoyed it and so forth. He was feeling better the next morning. I gave him another drink the next morning. And he left. And the next year he came back. Same man. A check in there. And I was out. I was working out in the field somewhere. And he said, "Where's that boy?" "It was here last year." And I said, "He's out working." And my God, he told my daddy about it. I didn't want him to know.
Yeah. The funniest thing, Ed's mother, every time she gets a old bottle of whiskey, she's always taking it away from one of the boys or one of her brothers or somewhere. She put camphor in it. She'd shave up a block of camphor in it, you know, so they couldn't drink it. Well, since she's gotten older, and you know what, you recommended that the doctor prescribe wine for her after her meals, and every time we go down, Ed takes her half a gallon of wine, and occasionally he'll get her a bottle of Old Taylor bourbon or something, because all those older women, you know, like a little hot toddy. Yeah. So he asked her the other day, he said, "Mother, how's your Old Taylor?" "Oh," she said, "I made camphor out of it." For God's sake, you didn't make camphor out of Old Taylor, did you? Mr. Campbell's youngest brother was just a boy, just a young man, I reckon, when your daddy, when his mother died, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Anyhow, he lived with Mr. and Mrs. Campbell for a while after they were married, and he was courting over on the
Long Shoal.
And he had been out and drunk the night before, and Mrs. Campbell had, they mixed black drawed up with whiskey too.
Yeah.
And if it was
they just take a jigger of whiskey.
So she had a bottle of black drunk and whiskey mixed up on the mantle, and he'd been out drunk the night before and was feeling awful bad. And And he just walked by and found this bottle, and he was willing to take a chance on it, so he put 2 or 3 drinks on it. He had a date that afternoon to go see his girl over in Longshore. He left riding his horse, and he got over there, and about the time he got there, he had to leave, and he had to walk all the way home and leave his horse.
Yeah. And stop every
five yards, I think.
He said, no. Coming. He said, where is that bottle? I'm going to shoot it all to hell.
I thought that was one of the funniest things I ever heard of a man going to see his girl with a big black stick.
Yeah.
Well, entertainment was pretty simple in those days. Mm-hmm. And the big important thing was just the little thing that happened in town. You know, a little something was said, a little funny word. It's like you're talking about the loafers in the courthouse a while ago. It reminds me, just before I left Louisville one summer, Pete Wilson was a twin. His brother was an absolute albino, which is interesting. His twin brother was an albino, but Pete had a livery stable, a good business, and just drunk it all up. And he was drinking all the time, and his wife come up and got him one night to go home for supper, and he's kind of walking down the street in front of her, and she's absentmindedly slapping a little switch along her leg, walking along behind him. It looked like she's kind of driving him. And the loafers, he had to go by the courthouse yard. Here sat Albert I. Dick Combs and Jim Shepherd and Tom Moore and Henry Slick and all these loafers. He just sat there in the car door and hot shot all, and they made fun of everybody. And Pete apparently knew that he had to say something before he got along there, before they could do him. So Jim Shepherd was furious. So just before, he's walking about 10 feet in front of his wife with this little switch, and before they get a chance to say anything, he yells over to Jim Sherwood and says, "Sherry, can't you get her for driving without a license?" That quieted him down.
Old Charlie Hogg used to sit over in that courtyard all the time and he carried a cane. He was, I don't know what he weighed.
300 pounds.
He was that big around. And he just kind of croaked when he talked. And every time one of those children would pass through the courtyard, he'd reach out with that cane and he'd hook us. Give you a quarter. Go buy some ice cream.
Never two kids or dogs walked through that courthouse yard, didn't have to fight though. They took them on one night.
Yeah. He had no ulterior motives, but I mean, that was the only time a child ever got a quarter from Charlie Holmes, hooked him by the leg and pull them over and give them a quarter.
Charlie tells some good stories on him. One was he was boating, fishing down the river down there one day, and some woman come down and wanted to cross the river. And he decided to row her across and got in the boat, and he was about to pass some gas. So he thought, well, I'll just fire my pistol just about the time I pass the gas. So he fired the pistol and snatched his pistol and misfired, and he nearly jumped in the river and drowned himself. Oh.
Ed had a friend who did that in school. He had some gas, and he figured out what he was going to do. He opened his geography book, and he was going to slam it together. He misfired. He slammed it in the front of the
door. Everybody looked around, and then he
cut. Everybody looked.
Charlie Hall went to Lexington and watched and had a few drinks on the street, and a policeman come up to arrest him, and Charlie didn't want to go in, and the policeman pulled out his pistol and said, "Now come on." Charlie says, "Well, I got one just like that," and he says, "Go pull out a pearl and a pistol," and the policeman just turned around and walked out.
Charlie went down there. He'd get drunk every time he'd go down there. He went down there and get his shoes shined, and he acted like he's deaf and dumb. Two niggers in there shining shoes, and he's motioning to them and all. And those niggers were talking. One of them said, "He's deaf and dumb, ain't he?" And he said, "Yeah." And Charlie was like, "No," and said, "He's a big son, bitch, ain't he?"
That reminds me, Dr. Bill Smith next door to us was the greatest old man he ever saw, knew in Fort Thomas, and he had an old deaf woman. For years couldn't hear a thing, and he could say anything he wanted to. So one day, he's laughing and telling me about the time that his nurse come in, and she said, "Miss so-and-so," and he says, "What's new to that deaf old bitch?" And she spoke up and said, "That deaf old bitch just bought a hearing aid."
played a joke on her. He got a hot water bottle and filled it full of lukewarm water and took bed with him. And by the time she had turned over on her side, he just eased the stopper out. She don't let this lukewarm water before. Just like he had wet the bed and she left him.
She well, he said, she said, I won't sleep for me. I've wet the bed. My God, wet me all night. And got up, I'm going home. And so Dick said, oh, now Gladys, come on here. Said, I didn't do that. Said, here's a hot water bottle. And that made her madder. She said, we ought not have done that.
She left him over. She finally came back.
Yeah. Dick one time went to a nigger meeting, and several of the boys went. And they was looking in the window at the niggers preaching and carrying on. And there was a nigger's man sitting right by the window, chewing tobacco. And the reason he's sitting there so he could spit out. So he turned around and it's dark out there. Of course, he spit right in Dick's face. And Dick's feeling for a rock. And he found up a big pile of cow shit there, and he just grabbed a handful of it and slung it through the window.
Slop jar in your room. I went out in the car to get a taste.
Going to work?
He went out in his car to get a taste. Pete, when did
you grow the mustache? There's a flashlight right there.
What? When did you grow the mustache?
Nah, I started it this time.
I got to ask Morris if he's going up to the reception for Jenny.
Yeah, we got an invitation to that, I guess, yesterday.
Well, I suppose a gift as well as a recipe is required. I don't know. I got to ask Morris. I think so.
When is it?
Labor Day. It's the second, the day before Labor Day. We might be here.
Where's it going to be?
Up in Ohio, somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah.
At Shar Sisters. Earnshaw.
Earnshaw's going to be? Or Earnshaw's going to be?
Do you know where Earnshaw is?
Is Jenny going to be there or not Jenny?
I guess, is Laura?
Laura will be there. Oh, no. Yeah. No. No.
Jenny's
going to
be there.
She's going to be there. Okay.
She's
in Nebraska.
Well, they're coming to
Louisville.
I saw pictures of her husband.
What's all of them
there? Working in a daycare center. She didn't get a school or hang out one yet.
What's her husband doing?
Seems like somebody told me he had a young pastor, but I don't know what it was. Morris, are you going to the reception for Jenny?
Yeah, well, we're
well, tell me, is gift as well as the recipe required?
I think we'll ought to take her a little gift. I don't know why.
I think I'll send
it
tomorrow.
I don't think it's required, but we'll send it tomorrow. Speaking of slop jars, didn't I hear that one of the camel boys once got one hung on his head?
No, for sure. He got hung in a chair.
No, not on it. I got hung in a chair.
They had to bust him out.
What happened? They had, back when I was a little boy, probably by 40 or 50 different sizes of jars, I mean stone jars. They didn't have these half-gallon jars. Now they had to buy a 2-gallon jar, 5-gallon, 10-gallon jar, whatever you want. So, my father's a big fat man, and I went with him to salt the cattle, and he would get down and sprinkle that salt. He'd kneel down and sprinkle his salt around on the rocks for the cattle, And I was a little boy playing. I had some shell corn, and I spent like I was salting them cattle, and I kneeled down, got my knees down there. I was sprinkling this corn around in that jar, and my God, when he lifted me up, my knees got in the bind, they couldn't get me in. Father couldn't get his hand down in the time, and I was cutting rusty. And finally he reached up on top of the vinegar barrel and got a hatchet and hit that jar just one leg and it just fell apart. The boss said, there's 45 cents shot to hell now. It wasn't a churn, it was one of the 3 gallon jar.
It was
3 gallon crock for 45 cents.
The funniest thing that strikes me as being funny, it wasn't really funny. I think when Ed was little, he would hold his breath until he practically turned blue in the face. And Miss Campbell would holler for Mr. Campbell, and he would jump the fence and get to the house. I don't know what they did to him, but I was shook the fire out of him, and he'd caught his breath. And he was the first child. But it just strikes me as funny picture Mr. Campbell.
I thought Dick was
fence.
Older than you.
Nope.
No, Ed's older. No.
Edith Young? No,
John. John's 13 years younger than Ed. He's 53
now.
And you're 54, right?
Yeah, I think I was much older than John than I am.
Edith is a couple of years younger than I am. And Les is a year older, I think.
There's 3 years difference in all of us showing except one is 4 now. 4, 3, 7, 10, 13.
There's
4
between Edith and John.
Mm-hmm. What time of night are you getting to be?
It's 10 after 11.
10 after 11. We holding you all up?
Not me. What time do you all want to get up and eat breakfast?
Well, we thought we'd like to be down to Stocksville fairly early to see what's going on down there.
I'll be awake early.
We'll.
So when I don't get awake, I'll cook breakfast and wake you up.
What do you mean early? About
4:30?
Yeah. I think that's 6:30, 7. That
stock
sale starts at 7.
Oh, exactly.
They got trucks parked down
there. Well, I mean, the people start getting in there at
7 or 7:30. Yeah.
But the sale don't start till 1.
Well, no, they're not interested in seeing themselves stock picture. They're interested in seeing the people, I think.
We want to see the crowd and the people. People wants to look.
I bought you a horse rest or something or whatever it is.
You did?
Didn't I
send
you
to?
No, he was
going
in a pro, wasn't he?
No. Drawing
knife,
wasn't
he?
Yeah, thank you. I meant to thank you for that. Yeah, I got that. Yeah.
Yeah, drawing knife, yeah. Get at the school.
So you can make us a bench.
I thought about that today, but I didn't have time to cut one out.
That little old sycamore stool is cute. Do you know where it sat all summer? Eddie took it over and set it on the dam and sat there and fished.
He caught every goldfish
in there. Let me tell you about his experiences with the goldfish. He caught one by one, he caught them all, and he